I am interviewing my grandma, Mary Harvey, and she is 73 years old, and I chose her because she's been in my life forever. She's a role model, and she's my namesake, and I love her very much. So the first question is, what was the biggest challenge growing up in poverty?
Well, I grew up without a dad. My dad died when I was 3. And it was my mother and I mostly. And we really didn't have a lot of extra money. But she always made sure that I had clothes that looked like everybody else's. And we always had plenty to eat. So I don't really feel like I didn't realize that we did not have a lot. I did not realize that we were really in poverty. There were people that were much worse off than we are.
Well, I say that, like, during the time period that you grew up, during the wars and everything.
The World War II just ended when I was born. Mm-hmm.
And it was starting to rebuild.
And so things were getting better. There were more jobs, and people were able to have a little bit more. The dollar bill didn't go as far as it does today, even. Mm-hmm. But you still had more than you did back in the Depression and during war times, because in 1945 the war ended, and that's when I was born.
Really? Mm-hmm. So did your other siblings, did Travis go into the war?
He was in the war. My brother was in the war. He was in the Navy.
Oh.
And he did not come home until after I was born, after the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time he saw me. I was already over a year old by the time he got home.
Did he have a job after the war?
He got a job after the war. He worked for United Transports. He did not go stay in service. He did get a job and did not re-enlist or anything.
Mm. Okay. Okay. What was your first memory of your home?
My first memory of my home was we had a front porch, mm-hmm. and it had a swing on it and 2 rocking chairs.
Yes.
And I loved being able to sit out in that swing, even as a little bitty girl, and my mother would sit in one of the rocking chairs and I would sit in the swing. And I would swing and she would rock, and we just loved our home because it was just, it was very modest, but it was very comfortable. And we could sit on the front porch and we could wave at people as they went down the road.
I love it. How do you think growing up without a father affected you?
I really was very fortunate because I had an extremely wonderful mother, and I had sisters and a brother that were all a lot older than me, but they always were there to make sure I had what I needed. Mm-hmm. And if I was sick, I was always, you know, taken to the doctor by one of my sisters. My mother did not drive, and we did not have a car. So it was really, we were a very close family, and they made sure that me being the youngest and my father being dead, that we were well taken care of.
Oh, yeah. That's great. So what was it like going to high school in your time? What do you remember?
I loved high school. It was at a time when we wore can-can petticoats and our skirts were really, really full, and we wore bobby socks and tennis shoes or loafers, and we wore the page boy hair. My hair was turned under, rolled on bobby pins.
Ooh.
And it was really, I loved high school, and I was popular in high school.
Grandma.
And I was. And I had lots of friends. And it was just, I thought it was one of the best high school times because we didn't have any of the modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
We still just talked on regular telephones, and we did not have any cell phones. And I typed on a manual typewriter, which is extinct today. But I did enjoy that. But we went to football games, and we had a choir at school, and I had really good teachers. I was in the senior play in high school, and it was a good time. High school was just a really good time.
That's great. Were there any, like, really weird fads in your childhood age?
I don't remember exactly fads other than basically, like I said, I think those can-can petticoats with all, we would put three or four of them under a skirt, and the more your skirt stood out, the better you thought you looked.
Oh, man.
And when you would walk down the aisles in school where the desks were, your petticoats and skirt usually were knocking people's pencils off and their folders off and sometimes their books off.
Grandma. That was, I don't think that was a good investment.
That was really something else, but that was fairly popular then.
Sounds dangerous. Sounds a little bit dangerous. As a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A school teacher.
Really? Why is that?
I always liked to play school as a child.
Mm.
And I taught Sunday school class when I was probably no more than 12 or 13 years old. I was teaching Sunday school class to like first graders or kindergarten age. Mm-hmm. And I always enjoyed the art of teaching. I thought being able to teach something to a younger person was really important to me. So I always did, aspire to be a school teacher.
And you did grow up to be a school teacher at one point, right?
I was a substitute teacher. Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. But then I substituted for the elementary school that my children went to, and mm-hmm. the principal was really good to me. She called me every time she had a teacher out. I got the call. So I spent about 7 or 8 years substituting in this one school. I knew all the teachers mm-hmm. and most of the kids because they all ended up having me at one point in time, anywhere from kindergarten through fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Now, Grandma, did you rule with an iron fist in your classrooms?
No, they were very respectful of me because that was when kids really were very respectful of their teachers.
We don't know that now.
I know. But it was a good time for me because I felt like I actually was able to really teach them. We mm-hmm. we really worked on our spelling and our reading and our math. That was at a time when we were learning multiplication tables and things of that nature.
What grade did you usually substitute for?
I really preferred from second through fifth, but I did do kindergarten and first grade sometimes too.
That can be a challenge.
They were sweet and I enjoyed them, but I felt like I really got to really teach them something when they were in the older grades.
Did you ever teach one of your kids?
Oh, all the time.
Really?
Yes. Paul was in, my youngest son was in every class I ever taught at some point in time. And he was always just glad to have me there. It never bothered him at all.
Do you have any funny stories about Mom when you substituted?
Well, she had pretty well gotten ready. She had moved on to pretty much on into junior high by that time.
Mm.
Paul was the one that was in elementary school with me. But one time I was teaching fifth grade and the principal came to the door and she said, and she told me that I might want to come out there on the playground. Paul was stuck in a tire. And so she stayed with the class of the fifth graders and I went out to make sure that my little third grader got out of the tire all right. The principal was concerned that maybe we weren't going to get him out of the tire. We might have to call the fire department. But finally, he managed to wiggle around enough that he got out of the tire.
How did he get in a tire?
He was playing on the playground and he crawled in it. He crawled in this tire. And he got stuck. But he got out unscathed and I went back to the classroom and the principal took a deep breath and was glad that he got out of the tire and he did not have to call the fire department.
Was it like a tire swing? And he just got wedged in there?
It was just some tires that they could crawl through, you know, like a tunnel. But he managed to get in it and turn sideways or something and he got stuck.
I don't know why that's so
So that
funny.
was a happening.
Grandma, that's the best story ever.
Yes, it was funny.
Like, I cannot imagine that. He's such a big guy now.
I know.
How tall is he?
He was a little chubby then, too, and that may be why he got stuck.
I'm gonna tell him that next time. I'm going to remind him next time we see Uncle Paul.
Ask him if he remembers the day he got stuck in the tire.
So how do you feel about tires, Uncle Paul?
Yeah, right.
Mixed feelings. Okay. How old were you when you started dating?
I was probably about 14. Yeah, that was, we didn't, and that was more of just kind of groups, you know, just groups of us getting together, going to somebody's house. I don't think I ever really went out on a date by myself until probably I was about 16.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of just, you know, getting together with groups. Kind of like you all do today.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely do that. So describe your wedding proposal.
Well, your grandfather, we didn't date very long. We met in September and we married in January. So we did not have a long engagement.
Mm-mm.
But he did tell me along about November that he said, I really would like for us to think seriously about having a life together. And I said, well, are you asking me to marry you? And he said, well, I guess that's what you would call it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay. And I said, well, I don't want a, you know, a long, long engagement. And he said, well, I really don't either, because he said, I think, you know, it would be nice if we could just get started with our life. And so we went together to pick out an engagement ring. And we picked it out, and he slipped it on my finger, and he said, I guess that it's official, you're going to marry me. And I said, yes, I am. And then we picked the date of January the 30th, and so we really did not have a long engagement from September till January the 30th.
So y'all met in September.
We met in September and married in January. That's pretty fast.
That's called love at first sight, Grandma.
It pretty much was.
'Cause your story with Teddy is the cutest thing ever. He just... He'd call you, and then he wrote his number on the napkin.
He did. When we met, he wrote his number on a napkin and said, would it be all right if I called you? I wrote my number on the napkin.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's yes. What it
was. He said, he handed me a napkin, and he said, would you mind if I call you? And I just took the napkin and wrote my number down, and after we left that meeting that night where we all had met, I thought, I hope I haven't made a big mistake, because I really didn't know him very well, but I really had a really good sense of feeling about him.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you kind of feel like you really know if something's really good or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any qualms with writing my number down. And I don't think I wasn't in the habit of writing my number down for people.
Yeah.
And I think when I did it, there was something that made me feel like it was okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then he would call me every day, and we went to the museum, and we went to the zoo, and we just did a lot of fun things.
That's great.
So it was a good thing. I pretty much knew it was the right thing almost from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. So, were you a strict or lenient parent?
Probably in between.
Mm-hmm.
I think back in my day, we did expect our children to mind and to follow instructions and to be respectful.
Oh, yeah.
But we also had no problems with picking our kids up and holding them and loving on them and just doing anything we could to make them feel loved. I hope that I was not too strict or too lenient. I tried to be pretty much an in-between where I only felt like that I was strict if it really called for me to really stand firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if I could, but even if I did, that I wanted them to always know they were loved and that what I had to do or what I had to tell them was out of love, not out of anger in any way.
Sometimes that's the same for Mom. Sometimes it's not. She's so little and she can get so feisty sometimes with us. She's like my height and she's trying to bring down the hammer on us. And I was like, okay, little girl.
Well, it just seemed like that for the most part, our kids were good and they really seemed to be okay with what we set out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all people go through times when kids and parents don't see things the same way.
Oh, they have to.
They have to. That is part of living life and growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's absolutely true. Well, I think a little bit of both is kind of the right amount.
I think so, too.
Because if you're too strict, the child's going to grow up to be too strict on their right. kids or to be different and kind of weird.
Right. You have to try to find that ground that
mm-hmm.
that you can kind of meet on, you know, and mm-hmm. be in the middle there to a certain extent. I mean, it's a fine line
mm-hmm.
between enough or too much.
Yeah, I agree. So, who was the oldest person you knew as a child?
Well, since I did not have grandparents, the oldest person basically that I knew would have been I had two aunts and two uncles.
Hmm.
And they were old as me as a child, they were already probably like in their 70s, which
Ooh.
as a little girl growing up, that made them seem extremely old to me.
Ancient.
And it was two aunts and two uncles.
Hmm.
And they were both older people in my life.
Yeah. Did you have any childhood diseases like chicken pox or any other major thing?
I had the mumps and I had the measles. But I don't remember having chicken pox, and nobody in my family remembers me having chicken pox.
Hmm.
So I think maybe I skipped the chicken pox, but I did have, the measles. I don't think they were the German or red measles. I think they were more like 3-day measles. And then I did have the mumps.
What are the mumps?
It's where your jaws get sore and kind of swell out. They're kind of painful. Of course, now they
Sounds
have shots
painful.
For that. They don't. People do not have mumps in it really
And the
anymore.
Measles?
The measles are a rash.
It
just breaks out all over you. But chicken pox are usually the one disease that children usually have. But I do not remember having them. And I have asked my older sister if I ever had them, and she can't remember me having them either. So I think probably measles, probably just the measles and the mumps were the two childhood diseases that I had.
You know, those diseases, they really sound like a made-up thing. I have the mumps and the measles.
I know.
I cannot attend school.
Yeah, and back then, though, we didn't have the vaccines for all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, you know, even chicken pox, they even have a vaccine for chicken pox now.
So now you don't want your kid to go play with the kid with chicken pox.
Yeah, and like I said, I may have had chicken pox, but I really don't
mm-hmm.
remember
it. Must
having
have not
them.
Been that big of a deal.
Yeah, if I had them, I must have had them really, really young where I didn't remember them.
Yeah.
But I do remember the measles and the mumps.
So that's a weird name. I cannot get over that. Have you ever been a victim of a crime?
No.
No?
No.
Has
I have not been a victim of a crime. Of
anyone
any
in the family, has mom been a victim of a crime? Because
no.
I would love to know that.
No. I really can't think of anything like that. Maybe somebody got a parking ticket back then. We got parking tickets. I wouldn't call that a crime. We lived pretty, we pretty much just didn't have those problems. We just
mm-hmm.
followed the rules and didn't disobey the law. And so I don't
That's
think
how you
we
need
had
to live. That's how you need to
right.
live. What's something you've never told me?
Hmm. Well, I think I've told you most everything, Mary.
It doesn't even have to be a big thing.
Did I ever tell you that I cried at school because they made me drink milk?
Did they force you to do it?
I did not like milk ever. And for some reason, they started coming to the classroom with little cartons of milk. And I knew I could not stand that milk. And the teacher would say, everybody has to drink this milk. And they, you know, would give us little straws. We'd have to open up those little cartons. And it was so bad for me that I ended up crying. And the teacher finally said, well, I guess if it's that bad to you, you don't have to drink it. But I ended up crying in the classroom because I didn't want to drink my milk.
Grandma, why? Are you lactose intolerant or you just don't like the taste of milk?
I don't like milk. I never did. I did not like milk as a child.
So it doesn't make you sick. You just don't like it.
I just do not like milk. I never did like milk.
Can you like drink chocolate milk?
I like chocolate milk, but not white milk.
And you like ice cream.
And I like ice cream. Yes. But I did not like white milk that was poured in out of a bottle or a carton. I did not like milk. Plain milk.
Grandma, you are so crazy.
Well,
you like all these dairy products, but you just don't like where it comes from.
I just didn't like milk.
Some people don't like it. Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a bad day for me when I had to cry in the classroom because I didn't want to drink my milk.
Did they come over to you and like drink the milk?
Well, they tried, but I was just in tears, and they finally decided if she's that upset, I guess we probably need to not make her drink the milk.
When did you realize that you didn't like milk?
From the very beginning, when anybody's had me, I can only remember just like tasting it one time as a little child, and I did not like it then. And my mother never made me drink it. I always would eat cheese and you know,
get your
milk products she made pudding a lot.
Oh, okay.
And ice cream, and you know, I liked all of that. Just don't give me a glass of white milk. And that's true till today.
I feel like if I just put like a drop of milk in something, you'd be like, no.
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 No milk.
I'm being poisoned. What is this? It's
no milk.
How did the effects of the depression affect you?
I did not live in the depression.
Well, I mean like the effects afterward.
Well, because since I was born after all of that time, my other siblings did have to go through that where you couldn't get shoes a lot of times.
In the rebuilding process, like what did you see from like the time that you're maybe like 1 or 2 to the time you're like 15? Like what was the drastic changes of like the economy getting back in the swing of things?
Well, it was like people hadn't had anything for so long, but if they were able to finally get work and start, you know, people started being able to buy more things because then they started being able to make some money. Mm-hmm. Not the salaries were very small, but my mother always had a garden, and she had chickens and she had a cow, which meant that we did not have to do without some of those things that people were having a hard time getting. I know she was careful with sugar and flour and stuff because, you know, you had to try to, you couldn't always get that when you wanted it. You had to, if you got it, you were very careful about how much of it you used.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about the only thing, because I was fortunate enough to not actually live through a depression.
Oh, yeah. How did taking care of Teddy for such a long time affect you?
It was very tiring, but it was an act of love mm-hmm. and devotion, because I married him for being in sickness or in health mm-hmm. until death do us part.
Yeah.
So I did take, I knew that taking care of him was exactly what I wanted to do, what I was supposed to do, and what I did. I won't say it was easy, and I won't say it didn't take its toll on me physically and emotionally,
mm-hmm.
but it was the right thing to do, and it was what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. I feel like because you took such good care of him, he lived so much longer.
I hope that was the case. The mm-hmm. doctors had felt like that he didn't have as much time as he actually did, because I think I went the extra mile. I tried to see that I watched what his diet. He was supposed to be on a strict diet. So I tried to make sure that he had the things that were good for him. I took him to all of the doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm.
We went to all of the heart failure clinics, things that he needed to do. We made sure we stayed on top of his diabetes So I felt like that maybe he was given a little bit more time because we really tried hard to take care of him and to do the right thing for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that really paid off because I got to know him and he got to meet Margaret Ann.
That's right. And he met every one of his grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
He got to spend a little bit of time. Margaret was the youngest and he was very sick when she was born, but he did see her.
Mm-hmm.
And we did get a picture of him holding her and being by her. And then all of the rest of you all got to really know him.
Oh, yeah.
And do things with him and go places with him and stay with him. And we were very blessed.
Oh, absolutely. I just think his stories were so funny. I could fall asleep to him. Uh-huh. And he'd just keep talking when I wake up.
He loved to tell stories, and he loved for the kids to sit around and listen to his stories. And he made them up as he went along.
Oh.
He always could add things to his stories.
That's so great. And then he went to Colorado. Y'all went to Colorado with us.
We did. We came.
When was that?
That really wasn't more than probably, a year before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And that was he had said, if I could just make one more trip to Colorado. And he got well enough that the doctors told him if he wanted to go, he could go. So we did, and we were able to hike a little bit. We didn't go up any high mountains, but we did get out and walk in the woods and see the streams and look at the beautiful mountain. And it was a real special time because we got to laugh a lot. We got to look at all the beautiful scenery that is in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And he really enjoyed it. It meant a lot to him. And that was the last trip that he was able to take.
Mm-hmm.
But that was his one desire, was one more trip to Colorado, and he got to do it.
I feel like it can be very therapeutic to see the mountains and everything working.
He had that one special spot there in Colorado where there was the stream down below and all the beautiful trees and then the mountain going up, and it was just a spot that he always wanted to go stand there and look at that spot because
mm-hmm.
it was just majestic, just really majestic.
Absolutely. I think that's a big reason we keep going up to Crested Butte is because we're so familiar with it, and it just, I don't know, I feel like the more touristy places, they just don't look the same.
No. It shows God's handiwork.
When
you look at the mountains and the trees and the beautiful colors and the streams and all, it's just majestic. It's just something that you are in awe. To me,
mm-hmm.
it is a place that you truly stand in awe.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't want to have grown up
never
anywhere
seen
that. Yeah, it's just, I'm so lucky to have the money to grow up and go there every year and see that in all the different seasons.
It's really beautiful, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that time is very special to me because it meant so much to him to get to do it, and he got well enough that we could go do that.
Oh, yeah, and we've shared it with other parts of our family, like Bridget and Nikki and all of them, they went up there, stayed in our house.
Jenna, they were there, and
mm-hmm.
Paul went to Colorado too with your dad one time.
Really? Mm-hmm. When was that?
Oh, it was a long time ago, but they went, they took a trip to Colorado to do some fly fishing and things like that. That was quite a long time ago. It was before he was married.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've even brought our neighbors up one time.
Yeah. Friends mm-hmm. have gone with you all, and neighbors, and yeah,
mm-hmm.
it was a good time.
It's so great. I feel like everybody needs to see that.
I think so, too.
Texas, as great as it is, just is not the same.
No. There's nothing more beautiful than the scenery in Colorado. It's just, like I said, to us, it was majestic. It was awesome.
I agree. Well, I think this is a good note to end it.
I think so too, and thank you for letting me share these moments with you.
Thank you, Grandma, for being a part of it.
Well, Mary, how do you think that